Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, it's great to have you with us again today. We have an exciting show for you. We're going to be talking about a little bit about Begin With Yes, and we're going to be talking with a friend of mine who is a Facebook friend, actually, that I've never met, but we've chatted on the phone a number of times. Her name is Andrea Pattern. She is the author of several books, most recently a book called What Kids Need to Succeed. And we'll talk a little bit about the book and raising kids. And maybe more importantly, though, we're going to be talking about adults who I think are mostly who's listening today, and as adults, how to have passionate lives that are leading us in the directions that we want to go. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. It's good to hear your voice.
I know. It's good. I know that we're both from New Hampshire, but I know you're in Florida now and staying warm, although it's been warm up here in New Hampshire the last couple of weeks. But are you settled now down south?
Yes, we are. We've got a couple of kids down here, and they've been after us for several years to try to come south for a couple of months. So we figured winter months away from Mount Washington might be a really good time to try this.
That's good. How long have you been doing that? A couple of years?
This is our second year, I think.
Awesome.
So it wasn't anything I'd ever planned. It came from them. It's been a wonderful decision. We get to spend a lot of time with them during these months, and it's just a really super wonderful family time. So we're pretty excited.
Well, great. I was talking to someone the other day with the holidays coming and all the Christmas lights that are up. What's it like, you know, living in a warmer climate with all the Christmas lights? Does it feel different to you, you having come from New Hampshire where there's plenty of snow?
I think that people in the South do a lot more with the Christmas lights, actually. And we spend more time out in them and walking and driving. And my husband had to go off to do something a little while ago. And he said, don't forget, date night this week is driving around to look at new Christmas lights. I found some other sites that look promising. So it took a little getting used to. But being out of the cold is certainly a nice treat. I mean, I love New Hampshire. From there for most of my life, but
well, you have the best of both worlds because you get to come back to New Hampshire for the summers and
exactly.
And escape from the cold weather. Andrea, first of all, let's start off with your book because there are so many things I want to talk to you about. We'll never talk about them all in 30 minutes, but your book, What Do Kids Need to Succeed? I think that's your most recent book, right?
That was the first one. That's the one that's in hardcover.
Okay.
And that's the one I co-authored with my dad. That was one of my jump off the high dive and change careers modes.
All right. Well, before we talk about the book, let's talk about the high dive. What was that all about?
I should know better than to give you straight lines.
Because I don't know the high dive story. So tell me that one.
Well, I have worked in most of my family is very, very entrepreneurial and very successful business people. And I'm a bit of the black sheep. I had worked in human services for most of my adult life in community development, addiction, child abuse, domestic violence, you know, all the biggies. And I had done that for, 25 years.
Okay.
Sort of my full-time career. And had a pretty unique niche in that I did startups and turnarounds within that industry, which is unusual. So I called on the business background I grew up with and sort of absorbed around the dinner table and learned about just because I was interested in it, but applied it to either new programming or turning around failing program in the addictions field in family violence and domestic violence.
And certainly in the addictions. And certainly the addiction field in the last 15 or 20 years has gone through huge changes from my vantage point. So I'm sure that there was a lot of work that needed to be done. Well, did you like that and just get tired of it or why did you? Yeah.
I loved it. I love working with addicts. I love working with people who are making a commitment not to live with violence. I've described it to people, and I'm not sure everybody listening is old enough, but I guess that since you've mentioned grandchildren once or twice in our conversations, you may remember Sunday nights, The Wonderful World of Disney.
Of course.
Living color. And yep. They show that fast forward motion flower blossoming.
Yep, I remember that.
When the light goes on with addicts, with people living in violence, with people who are making a commitment to make a radical change in their lives, those people with trauma, those folks change so dramatically once they get that new thought that I felt like I was living and working in Disney's Wonderful World of Color most of the time. I mean, I didn't like being around the violence. I didn't like the court aspect of it. I didn't like the fear aspect of it. But actually connecting with people in a way that made sense to them and enabled them to leave that stuff behind and start to break the chain in this intergenerational pattern was huge. And I loved it, and I was really good at it. And my dad had wanted to write this book for years and years and years. I think it started with him being annoyed with me about something. and I had been a ghostwriter for him in one of my sojourns into the business world. I wrote his president's letters. I wrote his newsletters, messages to salespeople, to shareholders, that kind of stuff. And he'd been through about 5 or 6 ghostwriters and co-authors. And we went out to dinner one night. And actually, kind of a sidetrack, but funny story, sorry. I had finally done something in my career that made sense to him, because this whole human services thing did not make a lot of sense. You know, mm-hmm. He's sort of like, well, why don't they just change it?
Right.
So I had effected a financial turnaround of an organization and really had a solid bottom line, good fundraising, lots of stuff that made sense in his world. And I was telling him about it, and he said, that's really great. I finally get it. You look like crap. Why don't you quit that job, come to work for me, and write my book?
Ah. So that's what you did.
So, you know, I hesitated a little bit because I really did love what I was doing. I said, well, let me see your manuscript. And a few days later, called him up and said, I can definitely make this better. So that was the first one. And that we went the funky route of people didn't understand the message at the time. And so we finally took matters into our own hands and self-published it. The biggest compliment, the most frequent compliment I get about this book, besides the content, is it doesn't look like a self-published book.
Mm-hmm.
I had bought printing for companies, you know, in these various projects I had done. So I knew how to make it look nice as well. So that was the first one. And then I've gone on to learn, how to manage my own website. I've got a couple of ebooks out, Raising Good Grownups, Working from Home Without Forgetting Why, and the why stands for When to Hug the Youngsters, that I co-wrote with the guy who edited my book, Tim Van De Hey. And the latest one is called Inner Critic to Inner Ally, A Beginner's Guide. And that's something I created primarily for people in the sales business, sales industry, but I'm getting feedback from therapists and writers and all kinds of other people who say, you know what, this is good for everybody who's stuck somewhere in their head.
Well, you know, we're not going to have time to talk about all these different books, and there are actually other things we want to talk about too. But before we leave the what do kids need to succeed, I mean, what's the elevator speech for that? What do kids need to succeed?
Well, you will find that most highly successful adults share a common history. And somewhere in their lives, they've had to learn how to work hard. They've had to become disciplined, overcome adversity, and give to others. And if you take the high-achieving adults and go backwards, you find that almost everywhere. So that was something that my dad and I said, you know, people are making short-term feel-good decisions at the expense of their children's future. So mm-hmm. These four foundations are what we wrote about. And the book is based on true stories, little snippets of biography from high-achieving adults, and how parents can think about those four lessons. It's not the stand on the mountaintop and say, this is the one and only way to raise children, and you do this or you must do that. It's helping parents stay organized about thinking about the long-term results of their day-to-day decisions.
All right. Well, your career has had sort of an interesting path, and it seems to me that you can easily move in many different directions. And I know we've talked in the past, we've been talking, you're saying you're going to do a workshop over here for this group, and you're doing a consultation for this group, and many times they're very, very different areas that you're concerned in. And is that, was that by design, or is that just how your life has unfolded, your career has unfolded?
Oh, I think that's serendipitous. That comes from two things. That comes from saying yes a lot, making a lot of mistakes, but it's also how my brain works. I have a friend who says most people are just one thought away from being happier, healthier, more organized, wealthier. Mm-hmm. And I realized that all I was doing, regardless of the setting, was helping people solve problems. So it doesn't matter if you're a salesperson who's having trouble juggling your direct sales business with your family life, or you've got a kid going into treatment for addiction, or you find yourself in treatment for addiction. Everybody around can have all sorts of answers. And until the person who's stuck, until the person who's struggling and grappling gets a toehold, nothing's going to happen.
It sounds listening to you talk, and I was actually wondering this when you were talking about the book that you co-wrote with your dad, but it doesn't sound exactly like you have the answers for people, but you have a process, and maybe I'm not sure that's the right word, but you have a gift to help people find their own answers. Does that resonate, or does that sound?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's a wonderful encapsulation. I can listen to people in a way that other people tell me is unusual. And as I listen to what they're talking about, what they're sharing about, what their hopes, dreams, and plans are, what their struggles are, where they feel stuck, very often, like with a coaching client, for example, I'll get a call and she feels stuck. She wants to be a better team leader. Okay. And as we get talking, becomes very, very clear to me that there's some kind of baggage, there's some kind of past struggle, there's some kind of lack of confidence, or the problem is in personal life, you know, feeling guilty for leaving the kids to go to work. It's not a problem with being a team leader. It's how do I manage this time with my kids so that I feel better and can be 100% focused on what I'm doing, because I already know how to be a team leader. People are much more amazing, much stronger, much more resilient and creative than they realize. But they get it's like walking around with a wet blanket on their heads. You know, they just don't see their own magnificence.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a mirror.
All right. And let me ask you this. This is kind of a personal question, but are you good at doing this for yourself too?
Being a mirror
for yourself.
I get by with a little help from my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When something's not working, you know, I think it's one of those Oprah expressions. First you get a whisper, then you get a shout, then you get knocked over the head with a brick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting better and noticing when things aren't working before I get knocked in the head with the brick. But I don't know. I trust that inner voice. I trust that intuition. I'm willing to try things and fail and know that if something doesn't work out, it doesn't mean it's the wrong answer necessarily. It's I needed to learn whatever that thing was. For the next piece, for example, one of the things I've been doing for people is some little websites, helping with little websites, small business okay. owners who are stuck. Well, that came from making every single mistake, spending way too much money, getting ripped off mm-hmm. by a bunch of web guys. And yep. one day I got mad and said, this can't be impossible. I need to learn how to do it. Well, once I learned how to do it, it's like, well, why wouldn't I share that with other people who are struggling and save them from spending the thousands of dollars?
That makes sense to me. Do you feel that some of your ability to help other people comes from you having lived through some challenges yourself?
Absolutely. I think that although I may sound it sometimes, you know, if you ask my family, I'm not a judgmental person. Mm-hmm. I believe that everybody's doing the best they can with what they've got.
Right.
And I love that Maya Angelou quote about when we know better, we do better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes I can hang in there with people while they go through that. Other times, you know, I took a look at your book again yesterday, and other times you have to make those decisions about putting on your own oxygen mask first. Sometimes yeah. I don't have enough to give to somebody, and I have to say, I'm not the right person to help you at this point in time. And that's something that just comes with age and experience, I think. I used to give from a place of empty, and now I try to give from a place of full.
Do you think that, can we talk for a minute just about people who may be listening, who are stuck in either an addiction cycle or a relationship that's not working? Because when you were talking about that, the wonderful world of Disney and that flower opening and that sort of aha moment, sometimes that comes after a long, long, long wait. And a period of staying or feeling at least stuck. Do you have some thoughts that you could share about people who may be feeling stuck right now? They just don't know what to do.
I think what came to my mind when you said stuck is desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a spectrum in there. And when people are feeling really desperate and they can't stand the way things are going anymore, then they tend to become willing to try things they haven't tried in the past. So the recovery community calls it the gift of desperation. Just, okay. I can't do it my way anymore. Okay. And as much as I don't trust people, I'm willing to accept some outside help. I'm willing to look at something. I'm willing to revisit something. I'm willing to try something that was an obstacle before. I think that some of the awful things that happen to people, some of the awful things that have happened to me mm-hmm. have been incredible gifts to move me radically from where I was to where I needed to be.
All right.
I call it sometimes life just comes, sometimes something comes along like the Wizard of Oz. I don't know where I'm getting all these images. I must be hanging out with you. Sometimes it's like the Wizard of Oz where somebody comes along and drops a house on your life.
Yeah.
And the story that comes to mind when you're saying that is I used to teach job skills. And in fact, when you and I first started talking, I had a client and I was teaching. I developed a vocational education program for an inpatient drug and alcohol facility, women's facility, where a large portion of the people were recent guests of the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'd be teaching and talk about resume development and skill-based resumes and that sort of thing. And I'd always get an agitator. I'd always get somebody who was just having trouble and they couldn't contain themselves. And finally I'd say, what? I can't go to work because I have a record.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a better story when my husband tells it, but he's not here right now. He was watching mm-hmm. when this happened. And I said, show of hands, where are my drug dealers in the audience?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a few and they were getting really defensive. And I said, okay, here's how I look at things. You have customer service skills. You have math skills. You have sales skills. You have an entrepreneurial bent. All we mm-hmm. need to do is jump it from this track over here to this one over here. You have skills. You're not a loser because these things happened. You have a disease. You got caught. Getting caught was probably what stopped you. But look at what an incredibly resilient, creative human being that you are, that you survived this addiction, even if you had to do it this way. Now, I'm not advocating drug dealers.
Sure.
What I'm advocating is no matter what people are beating themselves up for, generally, it's a survival thing. And mm-hmm. generally, if somebody can help them look at it just a hair differently, there's incredible strength in there. There's something they can use.
Can you think of a story that sort of illustrates this? And I know you can, I'm not asking you to do it in a way that betrays somebody's confidence, but if you could speak in generalities about a changed life that you've participated with or witnessed, I would really like to hear that.
Oh, I have worked with thousands and thousands of women who were homeless, who were fleeing domestic violence. They're just such incredible miracles. I think the one I'm going to use actually is personal.
Okay.
I'm just going to touch on it generically to keep it from becoming the hypochondria hour. But I had an accident a number of years ago, and I have a pretty severe chronic pain condition. And when I first started healing from the accident, I had no balance and I used to fall down. Okay. And I was physically fall down on the ground. You know, I was supposed to be walking, I was supposed to be exercising, I could be on flat ground and fall down. And I was in a whiny mode complaining to the doctor one day, and he said, "So while you're down there, why don't you check out the rocks?" You know, I think you may have been channeling Paul Boynton before you wrote, but it was the coolest way I've ever been told, you know, that excuses aren't valid. And so what happened for me in that process was I realized the fear of pain was worse than the pain itself. And when I could focus on how I was feeling in just in any given moment, I could stand that. It's when that nasty little inner critic type voice in my head started saying, "You're going to feel this way forever. You're never going to get a full night's sleep again." That's what made it worse. So it was a process of discovery. What worked and what didn't work, and then learning how to be an advocate for myself and not letting people force me into a box for things that didn't work. And so this is one of these situations that I periodically have a flare up or a relapse or whatever you want to call it with this pain thing, and lose all my physical conditioning and get depressed and all, you know, have no energy to do things. And what happens is, what I learned from the first time is I never get better until I fire everybody else and take charge of my own situation. And it's always something very, very small. It's go for a walk and do 1 minute of Pilates exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Or like one of my coaching clients that I was working with was having a domestic violence history, was feeling very fearful, was doing very, very well with her business, but had gotten stuck and was feeling a lot of financial fear. One very small change that involved paying herself first. It was only $25 a month, but it shifted her mind enough so that she stopped panicking and started taking a look at what she could do instead of what she couldn't do. For some people, it's, you know, cup of coffee in the morning and then get rid of it for the rest of the day. People know people have their own successes. So when feeling stuck, it's a wonderful, you go back to what worked. When things were working,
really,
and do a little bit more. I remember people's faces and I remember their stories, but because of working in a confidential setting for so many years, it kind of all blends until I'm with them. And I apologize for that. But, you know, I had an email recently from someone who found me through, I think, one of yours and my Facebook conversations.
Okay.
And I had met her fleeing a domestic violence situation. She also had an addiction problem. And I just got a wonderful email, you know, out of the blue, however many years later it is, 6, 7, 8, life's good. Glad I found you.
Awesome.
I don't need details.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really glad that you told your personal story. I appreciate you being willing to do that, because this pathway to working through challenges and getting unstuck is not necessarily a straight path with no more interruptions or no more moments of feeling stuck, no more moments of being frightened or immobilized by fear. We have no guarantee that we're not going to bounce back into those places from time to time. It's learning how to respond to them more quickly than we did in the past so that we don't stay in those places, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think that one of the tendencies a lot of us have, or I certainly had at different points in my life and a lot of my clients have, is, oh, I took care of X. I took care of, you know, I quit smoking pot. I'm going to be fine. Well, you know, her addiction progressed and eventually the beer had to go. Or I've got this job, everything's going to be fine. And there's no finish line, I think, while we're breathing. And I think that that's one of the recurring themes, actually, in what kids need to succeed, if I can go back there, is preparing kids for a successful adult life doesn't mean protecting them from everything. It means preparing them. You know, you don't smooth out the road for them, you prepare them to walk on cobblestones.
And that's a beautiful sort of finish line for us today, Andrea, because we are going to have another show. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story and beginning with Yes. And come back and we'll talk more.
Always a pleasure to talk with you.
So we'll see everyone next time.
A bright future starts with a healthy lifestyle.
Pinocchio!
Good nutrition and physical activity are fuel for your child's mind and body.
Now you're talking!
And the food pyramid will help you find the right balance of everything you and your child need. Grains, vegetables, fruits, oils, milk, and meats and beans.
Nothing can stop me now.
Just remember, smart choices from every food group, along with the right amount of physical activity, can put everyone on the path to better health. You don't have to make a wish for a healthier you to come true. Just eat right.
Here's an apple.
Be active.
Come on, I'll race you home.
And make it balance.
Attaboy, Pinocchio.
A healthy lifestyle can lead to great things for you and your child. Visit MyPyramid.gov to learn more. That's MyPyramid.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.